He's found it at just the right time. The door opened a little and he's barged right through it.
Hello everyone and welcome to the Sky Sports Golf Podcast, brought to you by the Epic Drivers from Callaway, the number one selling driver of 2017. Thanks very much first to Henny for stepping in last week. I was in America working at the Dean and DeLuca. She did a brilliant job, although she is banned for 1 week, which we'll come on to later. That's why you will not hear her voice this week. But we have the man laughing is Jamie Weir. Jamie Weir from Sky Sports News, how are you?
Not too bad. How are yourself?
Yeah, I'm all right. Why are you laughing?
Because I know why Henny's in trouble.
Yeah, we'll speak about that later. And John Hawksworth is here
Morning.
As well. How are you, John?
I'm great, thanks. How are you? Good weekend's golf, as ever.
Yeah, good to have you on again. Last time you were here, John, you told us your roast potato, best recipe for roast potatoes, is squishing them like Jamie Oliver.
Squash them in the oil and the rosemary and the garlic.
Yeah, it was a
oil. I think goose fat's the best.
Absolute rubbish. Olive oil.
Oh, and a little bit of butter.
It's already been a fallout 1 minute into the podcast.
See, it's food and golf. That's all we talk about on this podcast.
Listen, you're expecting an Irishman to take advice about potatoes from an Englishman? Sorry.
If you want a food tip for the week, though, try Manchego cheese with truffle oil.
Nice.
Can't be bettered.
Do you want to... I'll give you a Manchego cheese little thing.
Go on, then.
So, a bit of Manchego cheese with a bit of honey on and some coffee granules on.
Ooh, you had me at the honey, you lost
the
coffee.
Try it. It's really good.
Sounds like a wind-up to me.
Yeah. It's not. It's really, really good.
Oh, well, I'll try that then.
Yeah, have a go.
I'll try the truffle oil first.
Okay, yeah.
Truffle oil can't be better.
All right. Right, loads of things to talk about this week. Let's start off with Tiger. This happened last Tuesday, so today's Monday, recorded it. So it's a long while's gone since the news broke that he was arrested in Florida after being found asleep at the wheel. Look, for me, it's really just sad to see, I think, John, more than anything, you know, I mean, he's been getting, for me, you know, grief on Twitter and in the media, and I don't know why.
Well, nowadays, it's a shame, isn't it? Because with social media, everything is out there instantly. Anything you do, anything that's said, and unfortunately, his career has gone rapidly downhill. For me, it all went wrong, really, after his father died in 06, which is a long time ago now.
Mm.
But to be honest, for me, it was always destined to happen, this sort of thing with Tiger. I always thought it was a car crash waiting to happen. It's really sad to see. Tiger Woods, 14 majors. I don't think anybody will achieve that again. He changed the game. He stood out. He took it to another level. There are good players about. Of course there are. But Tiger Woods was something special. And for me, greats came along. Nicklaus was the last one. Great, good players in between. Nicklaus was the last great. Now there's Woods. There are good players around. It's sad to see the state that he's in. It's reported he's addicted to painkillers.
Mm. Yeah.
Now, what Tiger does off the golf course, for me, a lot of sportsmen, it's just going off a tangent slightly here, are not turned on by what they do because it's so easy.
Mm.
Ronnie O'Sullivan, George Best, Gascoigne.
They need vices. It's effortless what they do.
Musicians, you know, 100,000 people watch them to go, what's all the fuss about? This is easy. Woods, the game was easy to him at one time. And then I think he's gone away and done some other stuff. His dad was a Marine. Navy SEAL training, they say.
Yeah.
Your body's made of tissue. It can't take the punishment. And he may have injured himself, which got him and had to start taking painkillers. Yeah. He had a back operation. It's really, whatever, it's really, really sad to see. The guy's 41 this year.
Mm.
We've seen the best of Tiger Woods. Mm. He set the benchmark. Leave him alone. Jack said a great thing, that he hoped that people would leave him alone and that he needed a lot of help and he'd be there to help him. But what goes on in your own mind is the most important thing. Yeah. It doesn't matter what anybody does for you. It's what goes on in your own mind. Mm. So it's really sad to see. And I thought it was appalling that they released the dash cam.
Yeah, why?
Yeah.
You know,
why?
Yeah.
There are worse things that have happened in sport. I'll not name any
players.
The dash
cam and then the video the following day as well. You see him in the holding cell, sort of slumped against the wall and trying to breathe into the breathalyzer machine. Yeah. Really sad.
Very sad.
Unnecessary.
I mean, he's an iconic, great player who's obviously going through a really, really bad time. And I hope he comes out of it.
Yeah, me too.
Forget the golf. Forget the golf. You know, we're not going to see the Tiger that we saw again now. But the mental state he's possibly in is really sad to see.
Well, I read a fascinating article, which I'll tweet a link to. Long article, so if you've got a bit of time in your hands, sit down and read it. But it is about exactly that, that ever since his father's passing, he hasn't been the same, about the Navy SEAL training he went through. And he's obviously just an extremely complex and very essentially lonely person. You know, he has these demons in his head that he hasn't been able to recover from. From a golfing point of view, terribly sad. Let's face it, he's finished, isn't he? We're never gonna see him anywhere near.
No.
Apparently, the guy can't even stand up for more than 10 minutes at a time, or walk more than, you know, half a mile. It's so how he's ever gonna swing a golf club again? I don't know. But you're right. The dragging his name through the mud isn't really needed. It's Martin Keimer released a great video last week, didn't he?
I was going to say,
saying let's rally around him and give him our support, rather than have a cheap laugh at his expense.
Don't kick a man while he's down.
You normally find people that criticise though haven't really achieved themselves.
Absolutely.
He transformed.
Yeah.
He transformed golf and brought a new generation and increased
the popularity of it.
Yeah. The popularity of it. You know, he is a sporting icon, a sporting icon, in the same way as Muhammad Ali was, Usain Bolt is, a global superstar transformed the game of golf.
I think Mickelson said, like, early in the 90s, he said, I was playing for a winner's check of $180,000, and he said, I didn't think I'd ever see the day where we'd be playing for $1 million first prize check. And he said, it's down to Tiger Woods that golf is where it is.
Doubled the money.
Yeah.
They rewrote the TV rights and everything.
Yeah.
He is the reason why they're playing for so much.
Absolutely. Well, let's hope Tiger's on the comeback trail and gets better soon. One more thing on the on news is sad to hear the death of Roberto DiVincenzo. Died last week at the age of 94. Now, Jamie, you and I are quite young. John may know a bit more about him.
That's a bit harsh. Are you trying to suggest I played with him?
Not at all, John. But I don't know loads about him. I know he won Open at 67.
Yeah.
Royal
and
Liverpool.
And then 68 Masters is probably, you know, obviously I wasn't around then, as you say.
But neither was John.
I'm a golf historian and I'm a fan of golf, and I watch documentaries and read lots of books and stuff. And I think, you're right, 1967 Open champion, Hoylake from memory, held off Jack Nicklaus and Gary Player that year. But the 68 Masters is kind of what he's
known for.
Younger
people might not know about this, by the way, so go on.
Golf is still, well, if not the only, one of the few sports in the world where you're responsible for your own score.
Mm, yeah.
1968 Masters, final round. He was chasing down Ben...
Is it Slowby? I might be wrong.
Golby.
Thank you. Yeah.
Ben wasn't Golby.
Do you mean Bob Golby?
Him too, yeah.
Not Ben.
Bob.
Bob Golby.
There you go.
We got there in the end.
I remember that. I was there.
Proper golf historian there.
Birdied the 17th. Roberto DiVincenzo got into the scorer's hut afterwards. All the hullabaloo, as you can imagine, around the back of the 18th about the fact that he's tied Golby for the lead. Tommy Aaron was his playing partner, had scored him a 4 on the 17th rather than a birdie 3. DiVincenzo, with everything going on, just sort of absentmindedly just scrolled his signature underneath. He signed for a higher score, so his score is recorded as one shot more than Golby misses out in the playoff.
Yeah.
And it was something that haunted him till his dying day. I think I read in 2006, he said, for me, the Masters hasn't ended. Someday, maybe in another place, it will be decided. A load of the fellow pros made him a green jacket. They had a great green jacket commissioned with his name printed inside it. He never wore it. He said he could never wear it because he didn't win the Masters. Mm. But he said he just wanted the chance to play playoff.
I think Jack said, like, even 3 years ago, that he'd go and visit DiVincenzo, and he'd still say that story. He'd still say that story about the Masters in 68.
He'd never get over it.
No. Be something, you know,
It's one of those... It's happened since. It happened with Harrington, didn't it?
Yeah.
It's happened with Mark Rowe at the Open.
Yeah.
It's happened in all sorts, but for a major, it's a bit of pills. The Masters.
At the age of 45, it was never going to get close again.
Yeah. No.
Yeah.
Terribly sad that it sort of haunted him till his dying day, I suppose. But he said, I was reading about it over the weekend, when he found out that he'd signed for the wrong score, he said in his broken English, "What a stupid I am."
Well, he was right.
But it wasn't his fault.
He won 230 titles. Yeah. But he only won 5 on the PGA Tour. So he won a lot on, I think, smaller tours around the world. But he was obviously such a great and talented golfer.
He was highly rated by all of them.
Yeah.
He was long as well. He's a big guy.
Yeah.
He was long.
Yeah.
And he could, obviously he could play, but he was highly rated. Jack used to rate him highly, so did player.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, good innings at 94. So
good innings.
Yeah. Anyway, let's go on to the week's golf just gone. And let's start the Nordea Masters, where Renato Paratore won his very first European Tour title with a one-shot victory over Matt Fitzpatrick and Chris Wood. He's the youngest winner on tour since Manassero, his fellow Italian, who won the PGA in 2013. And this will make all of us feel old. He's the first player born after 1995 to win on tour. But he was so clutch down the stretch, wasn't he?
Yeah. Incredible.
16, 17, he had two par putts at 16 and 17, 17 yeah. about 6-8 foot. And then 18, he had a monster putt to get down in two.
His leg putt was unbelievable.
Oh, it was incredible. For someone so young, he looked completely nerveless, didn't he, Jamie?
Completely nerveless. And do you know what? It almost seemed as if there was a divine power willing him to win that tournament. Because Chris Wood, who was looking like his nearest challenger, he left a birdie putt an inch short at the 15th.
Yeah.
He was an inch away from holing out for eagle at the 16th.
Yeah.
He lipped out for birdie at the 17th. So, you know, but for a rub of the green either way, that could have been three game shots in a row. And then, obviously, he made a bit of a Horlicks with his tee shot at the 18th. And actually, his third shot, if you like, his drop and then his shot through the trees to find the greenside bunker was sensational.
Yeah.
And he made a very good bogey in the end, but it wasn't enough. But so it almost seemed as if Paratore had had his name in the trophy, if you like. But yeah, I mean, everyone obviously talks about the speed he plays the game, which
he's
is
so
refreshing
quick.
To see.
He makes Matt Fitzpatrick look like really slow.
Yeah.
And Fitzpatrick's quick.
It's not easy to play fast on the European Tour.
No.
Because most players, by the time they've done their hair, then they're ready to hit it. I mean, you know, the game, they are trying to quicken the game up, but he is super quick. And he will do a lot of waiting around because it's just the way he plays the game.
Yeah.
It's hard to adapt.
Yeah.
Nowadays, a lot of the coaches, psychologists, don't teach you to do any preparation until it's your turn.
Really?
No, we used to be ready. You'd be hitting the shot. We'd be ready, knowing the yardage, what club we were going to hit, and ready to go.
Mm.
That is my biggest bugbear in the game. We've spoken about this before.
Mm.
When, okay, fine, I get it, chatting to your caddy and getting the yardage spot on. What shot do you think I should play? Fine, hit your shot. But then when it cuts to his playing partner, and his playing partner starts that whole routine, why aren't you doing that at the same time?
Because it's all about routine. They want you to do the same thing all the time so that when you're under pressure, it's familiar to you. If you start playing quickly, then slow down. You remember how Tiger Woods used to walk around the golf course. He was just strolling as if his heartbeat was hardly anything. That was his routine.
Yeah.
So they want them to be the same all the time. You make your preparation when the guys hit it, not prior to it.
Mm. John, are you a slow or a quick player?
Used to like to play quickly.
Yeah.
I used to travel on a Monday to make sure I got four rounds in. No, I like to get on with it. I've played with some slow players. I once played in the Open, I think it was 95 at St Andrews, with somebody who will remain nameless.
Okay.
And I felt like I'd grown a beard by the time we finished because he took so long.
Really?
On the golf
what was he course. Doing that took so long?
Taking a lot of shots mainly, but just not ready to play.
Yeah.
And it was so infuriating.
Mm. Yeah, so Chris Wood, you mentioned him.
Mm.
He started terribly. He bogeyed the first, third, and the seventh. And that's probably what cost him. For someone who's so experienced now as Chris Wood, he did look quite nervous, I thought.
He did to start his round, and then he sort of, I think he birdied 9, 10, 11, or 9, 10, 12.
That's it, 9, 10, 12.
And he sort of steadied the ship.
Yeah.
And I actually thought, going down the stretch, surely.
I thought he was going to coast it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was very frustrated about the way he played yesterday. I texted him afterwards, and I think he was just pick that name up there.
I've got it, it's all right.
the silver lining for him is that it does qualify him for the US Open. So
he's currently 60th in the world, and top 60 in the US Open. So he's got a hope. I think he's playing this week.
He's telling me that he's probably not going to play this week.
So he's got a hope no one jumps above him.
Yeah.
Otherwise, he'll go down.
And I haven't looked at the world rankings. I don't know if there's possibly a player.
So this morning, he's 60th.
Yeah. Somebody could drop out.
That's true. Which does happen a fair bit.
Going back to Nordea, I've played that golf course a lot. It's back nine and over 4,000 yards. It's in the trees.
Mm.
It was wet on Sunday.
That was really wet Sunday, wasn't it?
You know, the ball wasn't going as far. It's in the pine trees, small greens.
Mm.
That 18th's a brute of a hole.
Oh, boy.
Because they've added trees down the right, so dogleg left to right, and it's not that wide. All right, he turned his 3-wood over, Paratori pulled his driver and got a bit lucky.
They were very similar drives. Lucky. And he was so lucky, Paratori. He was just in an lovely lie. Yeah. He had a good view to the green. And,
a long way to the front, but he got it to the front. Great exactly. putt over the ridge.
Yeah.
Chris Wood, he'd be very disappointed he didn't win, but... there's a star born, isn't there, with Paratori? You know, when
you think so?
He's been knocking on the door.
I look at him and I don't look at him and think there's a superstar like I do when I see, say, John Rahm or Thomas Peters or Rory 8 years ago or Sergio however many years ago. I look at him and think there's a very solid European Tour player who'll probably win a handful of, a little bit like Matteo Manassero. Yeah. You know, he burst on the scene. And everyone said, oh, this kid's great. But he hasn't really taken the next step to contending regularly for majors, has he? He's just a very good European Tour player who's always there or thereabouts. Mm. I kind of see the same with Paratori.
Do
you look at him and think he could be a global superstar the way John Rahm's going
to
be?
You make a good point. But to win at 20 years of age on the European Tour, you know, Manassero won at 17. He hadn't taken his stabilisers off his bicycle. I mean, it was ridiculous.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And he went to win at 20.
3 times by the age of 21, or something, didn't he?
Yeah. One interesting thing that happened on Saturday. So Henrik Stenson, his club, home favourite, everything like that. Coming up the last, coming up to the green, I don't know if you saw this, John, they played Ice Baby by Vanilla Ice as he was coming down the fairway onto the green.
That.
John, what would you... Jamie and I have spoken a lot about music the last few weeks.
What would mine be?
What would your song be coming up the last?
I can tell you now.
Go on.
It would be Rapper's Delight by the Sugar Hill Gang, the full 13 minutes. The only reason
you wouldn't mind playing slow then, would you?
No, I went in for a competition about many years ago, and an all-day or an all-nighter, and I finished third in front of 4,000 people. I was absolutely gutted. But I know all the words to this day. So that would be my song.
Sorted. Jamie,
quickly,
I was going to say, there's no point us giving an answer. Yeah. That's the best. Oh, dear. What did you say, Jamie, last week? I can't remember what we were talking about.
That when I... did a charity boxing match a few years ago. It was Moving On Up by Primal Scream.
That was it, yeah. That was
Ring
a good
Music.
Yeah, that was a good choice.
Was it really?
Yeah, good choice.
You won't beat the hip, the hop,
That might be the new music for this podcast, I reckon. Absolutely, yeah. Right, let's go on to the memorial in America, where Jason Duffner claimed a quite amazing victory. He was... won by 3 shots in the end from Fowler and Anirban Lahiri, which sounds normal enough. He hit a final round 68. He shot 65 Thursday, Friday, and then Saturday decided to throw in a 77, which was quite incredible. And he went into the final round 4 shots off the lead. Jamie, it was a really weird tournament, wasn't it?
65, 65, 77, 68. Yeah. And Jack Nicklaus says that he saw him, I think, on Sunday morning before the final round, and Duffner was just water off a duck's back, completely unflappable. I'm only 4 shots off the lead. I've got a great chance of winning the tournament.
Yeah.
There's a lot to be said for that mindset. Mm. Being able to immediately put a 77 out of your head. Because he had the tournament in the palm of his hand as he teed it up on Saturday morning. For most people, observers, they thought, he's blowing it.
Yeah.
77, he's blowing it. Yeah. His head will be scrambled. But then he just completely brushes it off. Shoots a 68, wins by 3 shots. What were you worried about?
I know, exactly.
Incredible stuff.
Yeah, amazing. And no player on tour has shot a round worse than that and gone on to win a tournament since 1989.
Not even a moving day round?
I think it might be, I'm not sure, it might be third round. Third round, 77. Since 89, I think it was Faldo on the PGA Tour. It was quite amazing. To come back, John, from a 77, as Jamie said, the mindset... he's quite incredible.
He always looks to me like he's lost a tenner and found a fiver when he's on the golf course. But the way I like the way he swings it, you know, you're going about Hogan, he's bang on plane to me. Love the way he turns through the ball. He's not a big fan of putting, is he? Which is a pretty big part of the game.
That's an understatement, John, I think,
So to do that, you know, because he's been quietish of late, he's a very, very good player. And it must boost his confidence now for the US Open, having fired 77 to regroup and then shoot 68 and win by 3.
Yeah.
Because it was a good field.
Good field
again this week.
It's
a good field every week. But great for Duffner. I have to say, he might have swerved a few salads in recent months as well.
It's a bit of a belly there.
Oh, Jesus. Gee whiz, unless he's had his shirt on a hot wash. I don't know what it is.
He's actually come out and said recently that he's kind of lost love for the game a little bit. And he recently went to stay with Ricky Fowler in Florida. And he just hung out, played some golf with Fowler and Justin Thomas. And he said it actually rekindled his passion a bit for the game, because they were just playing golf for fun. Just, you know, hanging out, not doing much. And he said that they have the hunger to want to win tournaments when they, you know, they do go to a tournament. And that said, that's kind of reignited a bit of a fire in him.
He's not young, is he? I think he's in his sort of late 30s,
yeah,
isn't he?
He is.
So he's been around the block a while.
He was a latecomer as well to the game.
He's been a journeyman pro for a long time. And then kind of enjoyed that sort of golden patch when he won the USPGA Championship. 2013, am I right in thinking?
Might be. I think
blew
he
blew it in 2011 when did, Keegan Bradley won. He had that in the palm of his hand and kind of choked.
Yeah.
And then 2 years later, you know, went and won the USPGA Championship. And he was, you know, playing great golf at that stage and then disappeared.
Yeah. So last week, strokes gained approaches to the green, he was plus 10 on the field. That's unheard of.
Yeah.
Plus, his tee to green is fantastic, and that I think Muirfield Village is the kind of saying it now in hindsight, is his kind of course, because he is great tee to green.
He looks like he can't hit it offline to me though, the way he moves through the ball.
You were saying you love the way he turned through the ball, and that his club doesn't flip over, does it, through impact at all? He keeps it square, and
well, he's so parallel to the target, so his feet, knees, hips, and shoulders are like train tracks. Mm. The ball is the outside track and the rest is the inside track.
Mm.
And he swings it on the plane of 45, the club goes up like a pane of glass going through, and it returns on the same.
Yeah.
And then he covers it with his right shoulder and turns through it hard. So the club face, he presents to the ball square an awful lot. There's no manipulation in his swing.
Mm.
I've always admired the way he swings it.
Mm.
Let's hope he goes on to win a good few more tournaments and maybe starts enjoying it a bit more.
Yeah, let's hope so. Yeah, that's what we want. Talking about enjoying golf, Anirban Lahiri, who came second, who's honestly done nothing really in recent memory, he's actually said that he's now taking regular breaks away from golf and that he's actually enjoying golf a lot more. He said he was pushing himself too hard and working too hard to try and get into like the top 60 for the US Open. He's not qualified for it. John, can players play too much?
I think they can practice too much.
Right. Okay.
Alex Norin.
He was the example I was going to give.
PJ Singh. I used to beat balls. There's a lot of time to kill at golf.
Mm.
You've got to. Monty was another one who was the other way around.
Never practiced.
Monty didn't practice.
Yeah.
And that's why he's had longevity, because he's not had any injuries and worn his body out. If you're going to, it's hard to have downtime at golf and not think, oh, I'll just go and hit a bucket of wedges, I'll just go and hit a bucket of seven irons, and then get trapped into it, and you're practicing, to switch off from it and then switch back onto it. Sometimes can be hard, but if he thinks that's a better way to approach it, and it's a change from what he's done, it's working for him at the moment.
Yeah.
If that's the product of a little switch
in his
approach to the game. There's a lot of players out on tour beat balls to kill time. Because what
really?
Else?
Really? Is that what it is?
Yeah, absolutely. What else do you do? Mm. All right, you've got the internet now. Gone are the days with a bit of string and the tin cans.
Yeah.
But there is a lot of time to kill, so you can get absorbed into practicing. But good luck to Lahiri.
I think Richard Boxall told me a story once.
Well, I knew what he used to do. I think spend a lot of time with him.
On the Wednesday of a tournament one week, Wednesday afternoon, he was walking past Monty, getting on the bus to go to the range, because the range wasn't at the course.
Yeah.
And Monty said, where are you off to? He goes, the range. Monty had been there since Monday and been to the range.
Really?
Yeah, and that tells you how good Monty was.
Wow.
That he just didn't need to go
and
hit hundreds and hundreds of balls. He just teed it up on first time on Thursday.
Well, I don't know what Monty used to do with his time, because he certainly didn't practice. I mean, there is a lot of time to kill a golf.
Yeah. Can amateurs benefit from that? Just taking a break? As well,
I think the best thing for amateurs is, you know, I've played a lot of pro-ams, and I went down the driving range the other day. I didn't realise it was the rubber end you hold for it's been that long. But a lot of amateurs, they should work on the short game, not the long game.
Correct. Jamie Spence says that all the time.
Because, with the greatest respect, you know, they're not going to hit the ball straight all the time. But if you can save one or two shots around the greens and gain feel is something you acquire through practice. Hitting drivers and three woods and four irons isn't going to cut the mustard. It's your short game. So for an amateur, forget going down the range and pumping your muscles up and trying to clear the fence. Get around the chipping green.
There we go, free advice. Free podcast.
There'll be no charge
advice
for that.
No point in hitting two shots 500 yards and then taking four putts from there, is there?
No, absolutely.
You sound like something you're used to, Jamie. Yeah.
I just wish I could hit two shots 500 yards. Can't even do that part.
Muirfield Village was obviously Jack Nicklaus's course. Mm-hmm. Guys, what's your favourite memories of Jack? John?
Oh, I've got three, actually.
Oh, go on.
I'm going to give you them. When he gave Jacqueline the pot at Birkdale in the Ryder Cup, his arm stretched out at 1786 the Masters. When he won his last major.
Iconic.
Yeah.
And his, in 77, his second shot out the cabbage at Turnberry.
Yeah.
Force Watson in the end to hold to win after Jack hold from 30 feet. I spilt my cup of tea on them together. Yeah. Oh, and ruined my sandwich as well because it went on it.
Yeah.
What? That's unbelievable. But one thing, I was at the US Amateur 1 year and he was on the practice ground with his son Gary. I'd been invited to the US Amateur because he played the Walker Cup, but I wasn't bothered about it because, funnily enough, I met someone. And he came up to me and congratulated me on beating a guy called Jay Siegel. And I found that I was overwhelmed really nice. By that he even knew that I'd been playing in the Walker
Cup,
that he took the bother to know who I was.
That must have been great.
And I just went, it's nothing. He didn't give me a game. So those are my four, actually.
Yeah, you got four. Jamie?
My one was actually going to be, you know, for a man who won 18 major titles, mine was going to be that second shot in 77 into the 18th of the June Sun as well.
He's kind of forgotten that because Watson... You know, won.
I know. You know, I'm talking about a major that he lost rather than the one that he won. But you know, that just showed he had an unbelievable will to win.
Yeah.
And he would plot his way around a golf course. And what an awful lot of people don't realise is 18 majors. He finishes runner-up 19 times. Is that right?
It's just
absolutely incredible. He was a machine.
Yeah, mine's in from 2005 at the Open, St Andrews. So his last major. And he birdied 18 in his last round. And then he stood on the Swilton Bridge just posing for all the photos.
I was working for Ray. I was balling there on the road cross.
Really?
Yeah, in 2005. Yeah, when he retired.
Yeah?
Yeah. I was crying.
That was amazing, that putt. Yeah. Just never left the hole.
Oh, the crowd. It just I can see them now. Went bananas. Absolutely bananas.
Unbelievable.
Brilliant.
I love that. Love that putt. Mm. One more thing about Memorial. I forgot to say this. So I didn't know this until this, but they're famous for an Oreo milkshake. So Oreo, for people don't know, is a biscuit, like a chocolatey biscuit they have in America. So they're famous for this milkshake that they have there. If you guys ran a tournament, what would your, back to food, what would your food thing be?
Roast potatoes, right?
Iconic for, that you'd sell all around the course. So what would your little thing be?
Oh, belly pork with crackling.
Yeah? So little bits of belly pork you just give out, like £2 a go.
With a nice bit of crackling on top. Yeah, forget the bun.
Just meat.
On a stick.
Just meat and fat.
Dipped in applesauce.
John's got the best answer for everything.
You know what, that's good. Meat on a stick.
You've got the best answer for your walk-up 18 music and for your free food around the course.
I can't talk about that.
I don't know. I mean, I hate to sound like an old stereotype, but pint of the black stuff.
Yeah?
You can't go wrong, can you?
Oh, you can if you have about 8 of them. Terrible mess of that stuff before.
Yeah.
Can't get a drink it like tap water.
Yeah.
Can't get
that
Do you remember the Carlo Scratch?
No.
Have you not heard of the Carlo Scratch?
No.
What's that?
It's a big tournament in Ireland for amateurs.
Okay.
So I was playing for England, got invited over, and I was staying with a, what do they call it in Ireland? Not a vicar, a
priest.
A priest. So he takes me to the pub on the first night. I think we just have a couple of halves, have about 10. Had to pull out of the tournament.
To pull out of the tournament.
Had to pull out of the tournament. Oh. He got me absolutely banjoed. I thought he'd be a nice, sensible chap. He's a priest. Wrong here.
Wrong. That must have been bad, John. If you had to pull out of the tournament.
Oh, gee whiz.
Wow.
Bedridden for a day and a half.
Wow, that is a good one, John. That is a good one. Right, that's about it for part one. Join us in part two, where we'll look ahead to this week's golf, and we'll also speak to Claude Harmon, who'll be speaking DJ and the US Open.
Hey guys, I'm Billy Horschel. You're listening to the Sky Sports Golf Podcast.
Welcome back to part two of the Sky Sports Golf Podcast. And we're going to have a quick US Open preview now. And we are very lucky to be able to be joined on the line by Claude Harmon III, Dustin Johnson's coach. Claude, how are you?
I'm doing good, guys.
Good to hear from you. Claude, DJ last week missed the cut at the Memorial. He did say, however, he thought his game was in really good shape, but he just missed a lot of putts. What did you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think he made a couple of bad swings the first day and shot a high score on Thursday in round one and didn't make any putts. He played okay. I thought he played decent on Friday and just really didn't make anything. So, Yeah, I mean, the big thing for him is to play well at the US Open. He's got a lot on his plate at the moment. His fiancée, Pauline, is about to have a baby, so that's probably going to be bored in the next week to 10 days. So, you know, I'm guessing his mind is a little bit, you know, elsewhere at the moment. But he flew up to Erin Hills Saturday and played all day Saturday and played all day Sunday. And then I saw him last night and said he liked the golf course. He hadn't seen it before. And, you know, it's a big golf course. You know, it's pretty wide open. There's a lot of room to drive it. And I think, you know, certainly with the way that, you know, he drives the golf ball, I think it's, you know, of course, it would suit him. He played with Billy Horschel over the weekend, and I saw Billy last night as well. And Billy said it's just, you know, golf course it's made for a guy like Dustin who can just hit it so far and drives it so good.
So, with Dustin playing like he did over the first 2 days, what can you do, Claude, as a coach, like to help him? Is there anything you can do, or is it you just leave Dustin to be?
Yeah, I mean, he played fine. I mean, he just didn't, you know, he made a triple on hit in the water on 16 at Memorial, and then had a four putt, and you know, didn't really make a lot of birdies. So no, you know, I mean, if this was a 3 or 4 or 5 week kind of slump where he misses 4 or 5 cuts in a row, I mean, I think then you could maybe, you know, look to press the panic button. But you know, I think part of being a coach and part of doing what we do when we're around these guys is we've got to get a good gauge on when you need to panic and when you need to don't, or when you don't. And I think he hit it fine last week, and you know, just didn't make any putts, and you know, he missed the cut. But if he misses the cut at the US Open, that's a bigger deal.
Yeah,
Claude, you say Paulina's due in the next week or 10 days or so. Is there any suggestion that DJ would even miss the US Open?
No, he's not going to miss the US Open. No, but I mean, I think yeah, they're going to try and figure out over the next, you know, while when the baby's, you know, when they're going to have it, and no, he's definitely playing.
Okay. Claude, I'm disappointed that you say that the golf course is wide open and it suits somebody who hits it miles. Would you like to have seen the course a little bit tighter for the US Open?
Well, no, it's not. I mean, wide open meaning that there's no trees on it, so it's very much like a links-style golf course. But if you hit it 5 yards offline, you're making triple.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's not a traditional US Open-style golf course in the vein of places like Wingfoot or Oak Hill or Pinehurst, where it's very much tree-lined. So it is very kind of exposed, similar to Chambers Bay, which if you hit the golf ball a long way and can carry it, it means, you know, for the guys that, you know, are the longer hitters, they can take probably start lines and start it in positions that other guys couldn't just because there's no trees. I think they can almost stretch the golf course to 8,000 yards if they want.
That's crazy. Because I'm right in thinking, you say there's no trees, but where there aren't trees, there's sort of knee-high grass on either side of the fairway, isn't that right?
Yeah, I mean, if you miss the fairway, from all accounts, I mean, you're re-teeing and you're not going to find it. It's a little bit like Chambers Bay in that, you know, unless you played the amateur there, which, you know, some of the guys did, I know Brooks did, but a lot of guys haven't ever seen the golf course, whereas a lot of the U.S. Open, you know, venues that are in the rotor you've played before. So I think it is a little bit, you know, in the vein of a golf course like Chambers Bay, where a lot of people they're going to see it for the first time.
I've got one more question for me, Claude. It's just going back to DJ being a father. I was speaking to you at the Dean and DeLuca a couple of weeks ago about it. Do you think being a father has changed DJ as a person, you know, and as a golfer as well?
Yeah, I mean, I think anytime you bring, you know, kids into the equation and you know, your life becomes something about someone else and not just about yourself. One of the things, you know, because golf is such a, you know, a singularly focused sport. It's not a team sport. So your golfers practice when they want to practice. They play practice rounds when they want to play practice rounds. So it's not like a team. You know, if you're on a football team or, you know, if you're on a basketball team, you practice when the team practices. So, you know, golfers' lives tend to be very singular focused. It's always been that way. You know, if you're a junior golfer, you know, you kind of are on your own program. So I think once you know, for the guys out here that have never had families before, once they have kids or once they have, you know, children in their lives, it changes kind of everything about their life because it's no longer, you know, just about them being able to do what they want when they want to do it.
Claude, thank you very much for your time.
Absolutely. Good to talk to you guys.
Good luck with DJ and Brooks this week. And next week. And next week. Next week, apologies. So, cool. Thanks, Claude.
Thank you.
Bye. Great to speak to Claude Harmon there, giving some insight on Dustin Johnson and a bit of Erin Hills as well. Erin Hills, the first time the US Open's being played there in Erin Hills, it sounds an absolute beast of a course. So it's playing 7,693 yards for the tournament, but it can go up to about 7,900. It's a ridiculously long course.
Yeah, crazy long. I think if you get it offline, the grass is knee-high and you're... Well, you're probably good. There are very, very chances going to be a lot of lost balls.
Yeah.
But if you even do find it, you're just hacking out at the spinach just to get it back into play.
Yeah.
I assume, like every US Open, the greens will be like glass, that the rough around the greens will be pretty thick and lush as well.
Yeah.
It sounds like rounds are probably going to take a long time.
I think so.
So have a lot of coffee when you're up watching it in Sky Sports because you're probably going to be talking about 5.5 hour, 6 hour rounds.
Yeah.
They'd love... I don't know what John's views are on this, but I think the USGA sometimes go a bit overboard.
Oh, completely.
With just how silly they make the course.
You want it to be watchable.
Yeah.
And not for the wrong reasons as well. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, big golf course, but if you're a lumper, which a lot of these guys are now, the modern game used to hit the ball low to hit it a long way now. NASA's involved in the... development of the ball it is, and they don't launch anything that doesn't go up. So if you get the right driver, it ain't playing 7-6 because they're flying it 3-10.
Yeah.
And if it's warm and there's a bit of breeze, it sounds long. I mean, Brohoff's lot in Sweden, they make that 8,300 yards if you want, and it'll come one day when the ball goes further because it hasn't stopped. But the big guys...
That's what they've got to change, isn't it?
Yeah.
The big guys have got a big... It's never going to happen. Make a hole smaller. In fact, blindfold everyone. for the big guys, it's not going to make a lot of difference to the yardage of the golf course because they'll find a way to get around it. But the medium hitter, it is a completely different golf course. And the rough, there might be an idea to take a load of sniffer dogs over there and rent them out actually, if you start hitting it.
Because
I'd take one out with me. Go on, Bonzo, find that.
So it is a public course as well. So the public can go and play it if they want. $280 a round. Green fees start at $280 a round. So a bit like Chambers Bay public golf course as well. There's been six public courses that have hosted the US Open. So this is one. Can you guys name the other five?
You said Chambers Bay. Pebble.
I know, I just gave one away. Pebble, very good.
And now I'm struggling.
In recent memory.
Can we phone a friend?
Get Claude back on the phone.
Well, Pinehurst is.
Yeah, Pinehurst is.
Oh, it is?
Yeah,
oh,
Pinehurst is a public course.
Torrey Pines. Oh, what a guess that was.
Very nice. So you got one left.
One left.
Ashton Lee and Preston.
I'll give you a clue. It's very hard course. It even says so before you start. It says this is a very hard course. Beware.
Shinnecock Hill.
Bethpage is the other one. Yeah,
I was just about to say that.
Yeah, was that where Phil won? Did Phil win at Bethpage? I might be wrong there.
No, because Phil hasn't won this
year. Good point. Year, excellent. So, yeah. There we go.
And he ain't winning it this year.
No, he's not. No, absolutely. So,
I mean, should we have a chat about that decision?
Yeah, because it's interesting.
For
decision.
Somebody that's been a runner-up five times and isn't getting any younger.
No, but do you not think he thinks? I think my time has gone with the US Open. There are more important things.
If Henrik Stenson hadn't been playing golf from another planet last year, he would have won an Open Championship. Yeah. You know, he can still mix it with the young guns, can't he, Phil? And this is obviously one that's missing from the CV. The one major that's preventing him from having won a career Grand Slam.
I don't think you can chuck everything into that, though, can you?
Mm?
It's his daughter's graduation. Yeah, there's only one of those.
I think family does come first at the end of the day.
Absolutely, but you know, there's one thing being there for the birth of a child, but graduation, come on.
Yeah.
Is it that big a deal, graduation? Maybe it's a bigger deal
just
in the States than it is here.
Yeah.
Well, listen, hats off to him, called mortarboard off to him for being there for his daughter's graduation. He's obviously a great family man, but...
I think it's the right decision.
I do as well. Your daughter only graduates once, you know.
Is he, 45 now, 46?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he realises he's probably had his chance.
And if
I haven't, I'll take my chances in the ones I can play.
Yeah, that's
now
true. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So Phil is playing this week. It's going to FedEx St Jude. He's playing this week. It's at TPC Southwind in Memphis. A par 70 at 7,200 yards. So another tough course. Not many par fives on the course. interesting. The 11th TPC Southwind is a lot like the 17th at TPC Sawgrass. At Sawgrass. Really small green, small island green. So interesting to see how they play that as well. Adam Scott's playing. Fowler's playing. As I said, Mickelson's playing as well. Scott's first appearance here since 2007 as well. So not been here for a while. And last year, Daniel Berger won. Three-shot victory. And he held off Mickelson. So Mickelson's actually got a good record.
He's got a very good... His last 4 years, Mickelson, he's been second, third, 11th and second.
Wow.
So he's got a very good record around there. They've got... When asked about his record around there, he says the reason he plays well is they've got small greens, quite difficult to hold your ball in the green. And in Phil's words, there's lots of cool little shots around the green.
He loves...
Just
that,
such a
that
Phil Mickelson thing to
he
say.
He loves cool little shots.
And I think... that TPC Southwind in recent years have tried to replicate what's coming the following week. Okay. So they've got lots of narrow shoots off the tee, the small greens, and then I think before Chambers Bay, they brought in a bit of fescue before that US
That's
Open
it,
to
yeah.
try to prepare the players for what they're going to be playing the following week, because it always precedes the US Open.
Yeah.
I've just been looking back at its recent history. It has a habit of throwing up some quite random champions.
Really random, yeah. So, Harrison Fraser, I think, is one.
Harrison Fraser, Harris English, Ben Crane, Fabian Gomez.
Yeah.
So you don't tend to get... And Dustin Johnson won in the middle of all that. So you do get some stellar names winning it as well. But it tends to be some perhaps more obscure PGA Tour players that end up winning there.
Okay, let's have a pick then, guys. So by the way, last week, the picks were dreadful. So
last week, I've got a... Last week, the picks were just so unimaginative.
They went for basically the top 10 in the world.
They picked their three picks last week for the Memorial were world number 1, 3 and 4. With Rory McIlroy not playing, so they picked the three best players in the field last week. And their two picks for Sweden were world number 5 Henrik Stenson playing on home soil and world number 8 Alex Noren fresh off a victory and playing on home soil.
I think Jamie,
come on guys, put some thought into it.
Jamie Spence did mention Fitzpatrick, but I don't think it was a pick of his. But shame on them.
Yeah,
shame on them.
Not good.
John, you look at them, nothing like that from you is there here.
Fowler.
Sorry. Good pick.
Thanks.
Good pick. Man in form.
Fowler's playing great.
I don't mean Pauline Fowler. I mean Ricky Fowler.
Yeah. He top driving accuracy last week at Memorial.
Yeah, he could quite easily bob up and win this.
Yeah, yeah. And what impresses me about Fowler is his short game is getting better and better. Sand saves and chips around the green are getting really, really good.
He's put some length on Fowler as well.
Yeah, he has. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
A lot on.
Yeah. So Ricky Fowler for you.
Yeah, and yourself?
I'm going to go for another of Claude's charges.
We picked the same person again.
Tied third in 2015.
Yeah.
Tied second last year. Going to go one better this year. Brooks Koepka.
Yeah, he was mine as
good
well.
Shout.
Yeah, he was
and
mine.
And a man who's probably worth a little fiver each way for the US Open
If he keeps it straight,
I'll be amazed.
That's that's the problem with him. He can go sideways sometimes, Koepka, and he can put some big scores on one hole. And he just ruins his round. He's done that so often this season.
Yeah.
And he was my pick as well. So that's bad news, Jamie, isn't it, that we've both picked him.
Time we do that.
He was top 20 at TPC.
So you're Matt Fowler.
Yeah. And he was second at Texas as well. And he's a player that gets better as the season goes on. It takes him a while to warm up. But Koepka, I think, yeah.
Shall I come up with a different pick then?
Have you got another one?
Well, I mean, we have mentioned him. Phil, you just never know.
Yeah.
The week before missing out in the US Open, imagine if he was to go and win.
Yeah. I'll drive home backwards up the motorway if he wins.
If he wins.
I can't see him putting four rounds together. That's the problem with Mickelson.
Yeah.
He shows moments of absolute brilliance and he has rounds of brilliance, but he just can't put four rounds together. That's my problem.
With Koepka.
So am I. cue none of those to win. So let's go on to the Lioness Open on the European Tour, which is in Austria. In Atzenbruck near Vienna, the Diamond Country Club. John, you said you've played this course before?
No, I've been to it many times.
You've been to it, yeah.
Water and 9 of the 18 holes.
Indeed. Yeah. And it can get very fast, the golf course.
Okay.
It's a nice, pretty golf course. Not overly long.
Mm.
A lot of birdie chances on it. But it can get pretty firm.
Yeah.
It's always hugely well supported. It lies on heavyish land, which, when it dries out, gets pretty far. But the greens are always immaculate. Mm. I remember Lundberg holing a monster putt a few years ago in a playoff against the Austrian...
Fiesberger.
Fiesberger, thank you for helping me out there. Downhill left to right. Yeah. I've always enjoyed going there. Normally a good scoring course. Can get a little bit breezy. Nice to see Jimenez is playing.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
I didn't realise lives in Austria.
Yeah, he lives in Austria now.
Yeah. Yeah. He has an Austrian wife.
Yeah.
Which
yeah.
is a bit of a giveaway.
Yeah, yeah.
And yeah, he loves
Austria. But if you're a hero, would you not go and choose to live in Spain rather than dragging him to Austria?
A bottle of Rioja every day.
Yeah. Well, I bet skiing's come on a train.
I wonder if you can still get the cigars in Austria. I'm sure you can.
I'm sure you can.
He can get anything he can.
In all six appearances in Austria, he's had a top 20. Mm-hmm. Jimenez, incredible.
He's in well in his 50s now.
53, yeah.
Doing well on the senior tour, isn't he?
Yeah, doing great on the senior tour. John, is this course typical of other courses in Austria?
No.
No, okay.
Right. I mean, I played a great course at the Austrian Open a few years ago, designed by Nicholas, called Gutaltentan, which was near Salzburg.
Okay.
Beautiful golf course. It was quite funny, actually, because you know the cows around there, they wear the cowbells.
Yep.
And we jokingly asked the European Tour if they could muffle the cowbells while we were playing the tournament. you can imagine the answer we got. Because it was crystal clear, not a breath of wind, and all these cows are walking. Yeah. I mean, the size you get eating grass is ridiculous. But they were making this noise, and we were trying to get them to muffle them. But it was a great golf course, because out in town.
Yeah.
But this is completely different.
Okay. So, saying that, John, who's your pick for this week?
Graham Storm.
Oh, have you gone for him as well? Really?
He was on my list, but I'm going to go for a different one now.
Sorry.
Go on. No. Go on.
What's your reason? What's your reason, John, for picking him?
I just think that he played well at the PGA, being WPGA. PGA.
Yeah.
Was going all right to start with in Sweden last week, but didn't finish it off. He's won the South African Open this year.
Yeah, beat Rory, didn't he?
Changed his life when he thought he'd lost his card, and then he got it back. I think he's a different player. I think the field lends itself. It'll suit him, that golf course.
It's not the strongest field.
I think he's done well around there in the past as well.
He has done well, and he shapes the ball well. He's a good putter, and he's playing well.
Yeah.
So, don't know whether you heard me, Graham Storm.
What was your reason for picking him, Jamie?
Because he's got a decent record around there, and because, as John said, coming in off a bit of form, played well at Wentworth.
Yeah.
And I do think that having lost his card and then had that last-minute freak reprieve last year...
A bit like Poulter.
Yeah.
Has brought out the best in him.
Who's your pick then, anyway?
So, well, in that case, I'm going to go for the champion of 4 years ago, Joost Luiten.
Okay. He's a man who's lost his way slightly,
little
hasn't
bit.
He? Yeah.
But...
not a great chipper, you know.
No.
More chance of stiffing the divot sometimes. Yeah, it's not great.
Tied sixth, I think, last year.
Yeah.
Champion round there before.
He's a man that promises so much, I always think, Loughton.
He's one of those players who could, if he strings together a good season, be a Ryder Cup player.
Yeah.
But he's just that kind of level just below, isn't he? Yeah.
He was there when he won the Dutch last year at the Dutch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was just fantastic. Mm,
yeah.
Brilliant victory. Yeah. Great course as well.
Yeah, it was. So mine is a man who I'm just going outsider slightly.
Oh, yeah.
He pops up now and again, and it's Gregory Bordy.
Oh, yeah.
A bit reminds me of Raphael Jacquelin. Jacquelin pops up now and again and just wins one of these small tournaments, European Tour, keeps his card. He was sixth here in the last 2 years.
Right.
So he's had top tens in the last 2 years. He was 21st last week, third at the Shenzhen, which Fiesberger won. He should have won that, I think. Bordy had a really good chance, slipped away on the back nine. So I'm going to go Bordy in a slightly. I mean, Wiesberger is the massive favourite in this.
Of course he is. Yeah,
and
he would
form,
be the obvious pick.
On form and ability,
he'd be the Henny Goya, Jamie Spence.
Absolutely, pick. Yeah, they'd all go for him.
Yeah,
on form and ability, he is by far and away the best golfer in this tournament.
Yes,
but
correct.
There's no
well,
value.
We'll see, won't we?
We'll see. Yeah,
and he is a past champion around there as well.
He is tournament ambassador as well, so he might have a lot on his shoulders this week. I just want to mention James Morrison as well.
Oh yeah.
He's playing really steady golf, and he was fourth last year here. Mm-hmm. And he's had two top 30s in his last three events. And he didn't play last week, so he'll be fresh, I think, for this week.
Yeah, good call.
Yeah, I like James Morrison.
Big
as a
bad
golfer.
Burnt to be a Ryder Cup player next year, John?
Yeah.
Do you think?
Wiesberger to be a Ryder Cupper?
Out of 10, I'll give him 7.
Yeah?
Yeah. Mm. So probable.
Mm.
Yeah. He'd be in my team.
Have you been to Paris National?
Yes,
I have as well. Yeah. What a course!
Beautiful course.
Great. I've had a few tangles on the 15th, but apart from that, I'm over it. But it's a great.
It's been
golf
great
course.
For Ryder Cup as well. There are natural amphitheatres around the green.
Incredible. That second hole, the par three, with the water all around, you've got hills surrounding the first and the second.
Yeah.
And I can't remember, I think it's like 13 on the back nine or something like that.
18th's a great finishing hole. I mean, I know in a Ryder Cup, a handful of matches probably won't go up the 18th, but that closing stretch, 15, 16, 17, 18. tailor-made for match play golf. Yeah. It's going to be brilliant.
Be brilliant. It's a great choice. For,
strange incident with the Cameroon football team in 1990 in the hotel there, which we'll get onto another time. Anyway, moving on.
Teasing us, John, with that. Oh, Cameroon football team. Okay. We're going to finish with Ponder the Pro.
Yep. Oh.
John?
Yes.
None of that. It's 10-8 at the moment to the guests.
Yeah.
Now, the reason Henny isn't here this week is she's been banned for a week. So in last week's Ponder the Pro, when she was hosting, she Jamie Spence and Van Phillips were about 9 clues in. I'm not sure they were anywhere. They didn't know where. And Henny gave a clue that basically said, he's relevant. Mm. So they suddenly said, oh, he must be a Memorial X winner. And they got it the next guess.
Yeah.
So she's banned for a week. She'll be back next week, Henny. But you'll have none of that from me, John.
Right, off you go.
None
you
of that. So for new listeners, this is a game we play where the guests have to try and guess the professional golfer by asking me 15 questions and I can only give yes or no answers.
Oh,
now, this week's golfer is sent in by Connor Dunn. I've mentioned him about the last month that I was going to do it. Connor, this is your turn. So it's 10-8. Off you go, guys.
Right, first question, as always.
Yeah.
Is it a man?
Yes.
Has he won on tour?
Yes.
Has he won more than once?
Yes. That was two questions there, John.
Yeah, but it's 15 each, isn't it?
No.
Shut up, John.
Right, right then. Is he European?
Yes.
Has he played in one of the last 3 Ryder Cup teams?
No.
Is he English?
Yes.
Oh, now then. That's narrowed it. Is he still playing?
No.
Oh. Ooh. Oh, now then.
Has he played in a Ryder Cup?
No.
I've got it. I think I've got him.
John.
I think I've got him.
He's
going to ask
English,
one more question.
English and he hasn't played Ryder Cup and John's got it.
I think I've got him. Has he won the Dutch Open?
Right, John, if you get this...
Has he got it?
Has he not won the Dutch Open?
Yes, he has.
Oh, well, right.
How have you got it from that, John?
Well, because you said he's not playing.
Mm. There's lots of English golfers that aren't
playing. No, but he's won the Dutch Open.
Yeah, but you asked that question as if you... So you already knew who it was when you asked that question.
No. I've got a feeling it's my mate, if I'm right. He finished second to... or third to Rory. PGA, David Lynn.
Is that your answer?
Is it wrong?
It's correct. It's David Lynn. I don't know where you got that from, John.
David Lynn.
How did you get that?
Because when I said, is he still playing? And then he went, no. I thought... Because we were talking about him the other day, because he packed in as fully exempt, which I couldn't believe.
So he got tendonitis in his right elbow.
Oh, I didn't know that. I thought he just retired.
No, that's the reason he retired, because he got tendonitis. And he just packed it in immediately. He said he couldn't even pick a club up.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that. I was told he packed in because he'd moved into property.
He has moved into property as well, and that was the reason why.
Very, very funny on Twitter.
Is he?
Yeah,
I don't follow
him
on Twitter.
Droll, very funny.
Okay,
have you seen him ride his bike in the swimming pool?
No.
Oh, that's hilarious.
So a lot of people might not know about David Lynn. So he was a golfer that played good in 2000s.
Yeah,
a lot of young
Dutch
people.
In 2004, did he win the Portugal Masters?
Yeah, Portugal Masters as well, yeah.
And
he was
second
to
Rory
in
at 2012 Kiawah
Island as well. He was 8 strokes behind Rory, but he was second.
He got his PGA card on that as well, tour card.
And then he lost Wells Fargo in 2013 in a playoff to Derek Ernst.
Yeah.
So that could have just propelled him completely. I mean, he was top 50 in the world, I think, at that point.
I played a lot with Lenny. He was a great, very good player.
Yeah. So, he got tendonitis to the right elbow in 2014.
So, anyway, we got him.
Well done.
Extraordinary.
11-8.
I didn't do very much.
11-8. That's amazing. Connor, I'm sorry. I thought that was going to stump them.
Yeah.
But it obviously hasn't. Thanks, guys. Hope to see you again soon.
Yeah.
It's skysports.com/golf for all your articles, stories and videos. Go on, John.
Go on, Graham Storm.
Yeah, well, there you go. Graham Storm. I am at Josh Antman on Twitter. Jamie?
At Jamie C. Weir.
John, can you remember yours?
I live in Wharton. at Hawks with Golf.
Yeah, fantastic. Yeah.
And don't forget the belly port with Crackley.
Oh, I'm looking forward to that, John, at your tournament. Yeah, lovely.
And Rapper's Delight.
Yeah. And Rapper's Delight. And it's golf@skysports.com for any emails, suggestions for Ponder the Pro as well. Send them all in. I can never have enough of those. They're always good to have in the locker. 10 a.m. this Thursday for the Lioness Open on the European Tour. And it's 9 p.m. for the FedEx St Jude on the PGA Tour. Thanks very much for listening, and we hope you can join us next week. Thanks for listening to the Sky Sports Golf Podcast, brought to you by the Epic Drivers from Callaway, the number one selling driver of 2017. See you next week.